1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio. I'm Redbeard with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. Today in the studio, it's the British quartet that defined heavy metal music on their 45th anniversary of releasing Paranoid.
You know, the early part of the success is so much fun, because the first two Sabbath albums were great fun because it was all new. It was all new, and we all had such a laugh, man. You know, and then all of a sudden it becomes deadly serious, and people start telling you what you should and shouldn't be doing, and what. You enjoy those first few years of them, because you know you never recapture them again. You know, I've been very lucky. Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne in the studio with Redbeard.
The world was a very different place when Black Sabbath released their debut album in February 1970. By then, President John Kennedy, his brother Senator Robert Kennedy, and civil rights humanitarian Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had all been assassinated in America. The Vietnam War, which had already dragged on for 6 years, escalated in 1970 to an even bloodier level, with television nightly news showing images of fiery napalm bombs burning Vietnamese civilians, with endless body bags returning to America containing dead soldiers, no older than the members of Black Sabbath themselves, and thousands of Soviet and U.S. nuclear missiles deployed around them in England and Europe. It's easy to see that the lyrical themes of war, monstrous evil, paranoia, and encroaching technology to create even more efficient ways to annihilate the world, those were all Black Sabbath themes that now, 2.5 decades after the end of the Cold War, may appear cartoonish to some. But believe me, in 1970, these were simply manifestations of daily life. The Vietnam War, the draft, Richard Nixon, the bomb, and Black Sabbath. All four members came from Aston, a tough neighborhood in the northern industrial English city of Birmingham. Guitarist Tony Iommi, bass player and lyricist Terry Butler, nicknamed Geezer, drummer Bill Ward, and John Ozzy Osbourne, with me in the studio.
Tony Iommi used to go to school with the same school as me, although he was in a year higher than me. I remember him at some time, he used to bring his guitar to school and play music, and the kid teachers would get pissed off with him and whatnot, you know. But I never really socialized with Tony at school. He was in a different year than me, you know. And so I left school. The way I got involved in music was just purely accidental. I'd bought a PA system, a 50-watt Vox PA. My father had got one on the drip for me. It was a 50-watt PA and a Shure mic. And I thought, well, I put an advert in the music shops, the instrument shops. And Geezer came round to the house, and he was in a band called The Rare Breed. And they were looking for a singer, so I joined his band. But I didn't really like this guitar player. I thought he was an asshole, you know. So it wasn't really. I mean, in those days when you play blues, you kind of like got to stand there like cool with dark sunshade on and be cool, you know. I would jump around and get people going, and then the guitar player would say, "Hey man, you're in a blues band, man. You know, blues guy." I said, "You know, screw you, you know." So I said to Geezer one night, I said, "You know what, man? I said, if I go on the stage with that guy again, I'm going to smack him in the teeth. This guy's getting up my ass. I can't take it. And he said, and Geezer said to me, he says, "You know what?" He says, "I want to pull out as well." So me and Geezer left together. And then Tony and Bill had a band called Mythology up north in a place called Carlisle, which is on the Scottish border. And their bass player and their singer had just left. Tony had been busted for dope, and in those days, if you got busted for dope, it was like big bad news. You were the baddies, you know. I was with Geezer, and they went into the music shop, saw the advert, I'd called myself Ozzy Zig, I thought the word Zig was like would capture somebody's eye, you know. And then Tony and Bill came round in this van. And originally, we had me singing, Tony playing guitar, Bill playing drums, Geezer playing bass. We had a guy called Jimmy Phillips playing bottleneck guitar, and a guy called Clark, I think, playing sax. We were a six-piece.
Ozzy Osbourne will never forget the day the first Black Sabbath album was pressed up from the manufacturing plant. Ozzy couldn't wait to play it for his parents on their big home music console record player.
I took the album home, and my folks have got one of these old great big radiograms. I says, "Mum, I made a record." I was just so happy that I'd made a record, you know. So I hadn't heard all the bells and all this stuff that had been added on. So I put the record on, and it starts with this thunder and the bells and the rain. I'm thinking I've given me the wrong record, you know. And then the music starts, and my folks are ready to do a knees-up beer drinking song, you know. And my father turned around to me and says, "Son, I'm going to ask you a question, and you've got to be honest to me." I says, "Yeah." He says, "Are you sure you're just drinking alcohol?" I says, "Yeah, why, what's the matter?" He says, "This is very odd music. This is not music, this is weird."
Black Sabbath with War Pigs from the Paranoid album, the much improved second album released in England in the fall of 1970 and in early 1971 in America, and only 6 months after their debut. I asked Ozzy Osbourne about the bands that pointed them in the direction of heavy music. You may be surprised by Ozzy's answer.
The Beatles happened, and I was absolutely besotted by the Beatles. Anything with a picture of the Beatles on, anything resembling the Beatles, anything to do with the Beatles was on my wall in my bedroom. My bedroom wall was literally full of Beatles memory. Anything, I would cut out the word Beatles and stick it on the wall, you know. The Kinks, Cream. When the Kinks, when I first heard "You've Really Got Me" by the Kinks, what it did was it gave me this feeling like I knew what I wanted. When I played "You've Really Got Me" and that riff happened, all my hairs on the back of my neck stood on it, and all my hairs on my arms. And I thought, that is great. That's what I got to do. Now, the Beatles, what I did with the Beatles was, I thought, well, if I can get that kind of feeling with a riff and also have the cool melodies that the Beatles have. I mean, you've got to be honest, man. They had some of the coolest melodies of all time, man. I mean, you stick the Long Unwinding Road, I Am the Walrus, any one of them records, man. You stick, they were the only band in the history of rock and roll to go from being New Kids on the Block to Pink Floyd and get away with it. I mean, and they've done it. They did heavy songs. They did kids songs. You know, I'm not saying I'll go home and rush and play Yellow Submarine every day. I have it in my studio, in my dressing room. Every night I go on stage, I listen to the guys.
The title song to Paranoid, the second Black Sabbath album. Up next, Black Sabbath leaves the Birmingham station headed for America and a rendezvous with destiny that eventually will lead to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The first three Black Sabbath albums, the 1970 self-titled debut, plus Paranoid and Master of Reality, are now available as 2-CD or 2-LP deluxe edition sets containing the original album plus a second disc of rarities. Get your Black Sabbath deluxe editions on CD or vinyl today at Amazon.com. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Ozzy Osbourne for the 45th anniversary of Black Sabbath Paranoid.
Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne in the studio with Redbeard.
Thank you, Ozzy. It's the 45th anniversary of Paranoid from Black Sabbath, the album that Rolling Stone magazine writers ranked at number 130 all time on the top 500 albums list. So which came first, the concept to write macabre lyrics and songs in dark minor keys, or the name Black Sabbath? With the answer, here's original Black Sabbath singer and lyricist Ozzy Osbourne.
Originally, we just think of any name, you know, for the night, you know. But then the saxophone player and the bottleneck guitar player went, and then we went out as Earth. And then we started writing. And Tony was the guy who said, "Why don't we start writing scary music?" And I said, "Whatever, you know." So we wrote the song Black Sabbath. We wrote N.I.B. We wrote The Wizard, we wrote Beyond the Wall of Sleep, and all that first album. And we recorded our first album in 12 hours on the way to the ferry to go to do a residency at the Star Club in Hamburg. And so we got the van, pulled up to a place called Regent Sounds, where and I was kind of freaked out because I know that Paul McCartney recorded Fixing a Hole on the Sgt. Pepper album in this very studio. And I was like, where did he stand? Where did he take a piss? You know, and all that. You know, and we did the it was a really crappy studio, like 2 4-track machines. We got and we all thought that's what everybody does to make a record. And I was saying, well, how do the Beatles sound so great if all you got to do is set your gear up, play, and get in the van? It's and yet their albums sound so wonderful, you know. I didn't realise that all this stuff's added to it. So we come back from we spend about 8 weeks doing 6 45-minute spots a day. In the Star Club, and then on the weekends we do 8 or 10, depending. We like start at 2 and finish at 2, you know. And then we came back for the Christmas break, and it was just great to get out of England and, you know, meet chicks. I would get stoned, get loaded, get drunk, and just clown around, play music. Just it was a lot of fun, you know.
The 1970 Paranoid album from Black Sabbath ranked number 130 on Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums all time. Ozzy Osbourne recalls that it didn't take long after their debut album's release for people to start taking notice in Great Britain.
So the next minute, I know I'm in a club one night, and the manager, Jim Simpson, comes up to me, and then he goes, your album's just gone in the British chart at number 14. I says, yeah, pull the other one, you know. And he says, no, he stayed in the British charts in the top 10 for 2 years. Then Paranoid came out, and that was even not bit. I mean, and every English band's dream was to come to the US, you know. You know, we came to America, and I mean, we were instantly a success. And I'm looking back, it was like one incredible adventure. My life has been one incredible adventure, from being one level in life going back, to then all of a sudden having a car, having a flying first class, doing all this exciting stuff. And I mean, it was just like a dream come true. Well, it was a dream come true, you know. You know, the early part of the success is so much fun, because the first two Sabbath albums were great fun because it was all new. It was all new, and we all had such a laugh, man. You know, and then all of a sudden it becomes deadly serious, and people start telling you what you should and shouldn't be doing and what. And it's always the big. I mean, and if anyone is listening to this, you know, if you crack the egg, man, you enjoy those first few years of them, because you know you never recapture them again. You know, I've been very lucky, man. Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne in the studio with Redbeard.
Thanks again, Ozzy. Black Sabbath was a heavy metal sledgehammer in a James Taylor and Carole King world, and the music critics hated Black Sabbath. But that just made the band play louder and heavier, and fans like myself loved them even more.
Like in the old days in the 70s, you'd get bands like the Eagles, Yes, and Sabbath doing the same gig, you know. Or you'd get we opened up for James Taylor one time, you know. But you see, that's the whole thing in the old. Nowadays, it's like these metal packages, these rap packages, these alternative packages. And to be totally honest with you, Redbeard, there was a Headbangers Ball. I couldn't watch it because it's too much. It's and I'm called heavy metal, but and in its day, it went from Poison, Bon Jovi, Aerosmith, Ozzy, Motorhead, Metallica. We were all called heavy metal. Now we're nothing like each other whatsoever, you know, musically. And but because we're branded as heavy metal and we got tattoos, it's music is music. You either like a certain form of music or you don't.
Sweet Leaf led off the third Black Sabbath album, Master of Reality, released in September 1971.
What happened with me and Black Sabbath was it became, at the beginning we all had a purpose, but as it went along, that inevitable thing stepped in called ego. And to get four guys to come up with the same result at the end of the day was near on impossible, because not saying I was better than them, not saying they were better than me, but the fact is that success does change you. I mean, when you're hungry, you all have one goal to have, and that is to get successful. Now, when you get successful, it affects various... I mean, it affected me. I didn't give a shit. I was full of cocaine and all the rest of the crap that I used to do, you know. So, I mean, that stuff makes you talk total horse crap, you know. The amount of, there shouldn't be a problem in the world because I think we solved them all in a bathroom of a hotel with a bag of that white powder, you know.
Black Sabbath's original lineup of Ozzy Osbourne, Tony Iommi on guitar, Geezer Butler on bass, and Bill Ward on drums would go on to record 4 more albums. But by 1979, after quitting once before, Ozzy Osbourne finally left his Birmingham mates for good. There had been reports of fighting, or as the British term it, a row.
There wasn't a row. There wasn't a row. It was what happened was I was getting musically frustrated because, you know, there's one of the songs that I'm just a backstreet kid, one that we wrote. And there's a line that I wrote on that. It says, rock and roll is paying my lawyer's bills or something like that. But we were working on the road to pay lawyer's fees to keep the lawsuit going against the manager that was ripping us off. And I just said, hey, man. Well, I didn't get involved in this to become a damn lawyer. I don't know the first instance. I don't understand the business side of it. I don't want to. I don't. No, he said, now it seems my music's paying off my tax demands. That's the line. And we'd never paid tax. So we had to pay tax and all this and whatever. I said to the band one day, I said, you know, I want to do a solo album. And they said, well, Tony said to me, well, we're a band. I said, yeah, but I'd like to do something on my own, you know. And you know, it's all for one and one for all us, you know, the scene, you know. But I was still wanted to do something. I wanted to do something aside from Sabbath. Not saying that I was any better than Sabbath, because Sabbath, in my opinion, from 1968 till after I left with the two Dio albums involved, was one of the greatest bands I ever worked with. But I just had this thing that I had to vent my thing and do something what I wanted to do, you know? So I said to Tony, and he says, well, if you've got any ideas, you should put them to the band, because we're a band, you know? It'd be great if I come up with something and didn't give it to you guys. And then I said, oh, fair enough, then okay. What do you think about this? Don't like it. What do you think about this? Don't like it. What do you think about this? Don't like it. What do you think about this? And so on. And I didn't like anything. So here am I. I'm still frustrated. I don't like what I've done. They said, tell me that if I've got any ideas, you should give to the band. I've given them to the band. They don't like it, so I'm still in the same hole. But now I'm more frustrated because I've got this desire to do a solo album. And so I left. I just thought, this is crap, you know. So, that wasn't the reason why I left. It was because that we would write a song, book a studio, and try and finish the album in a studio, which is just total crap to me, you know. I don't like being in a studio. I mean, I got the rap of being stoned and drunk all the time. You know, I wasn't the only one, man. I mean, we were all in a bad way, man, with drugs and alcohol. A very, very bad way. You know, and that powder makes you talk the biggest crock of shit on the planet, you know.
After leaving Black Sabbath in 1979, Ozzy Osbourne would launch a very successful and, yes, notorious solo career in which he'd sell millions of albums worldwide. Black Sabbath recruited a series of lead singers, including the late Ronnie James Dio and Deep Purple veteran Ian Gillan. The original lineup of Black Sabbath would not perform again until the huge Live Aid benefit concert in Philadelphia in the summer of 1985.
I mean, when I left Black Sabbath, I said, that's it. I'm not doing any more Black Sabbath stuff. I'm going to do all my own stuff. But then the kids said to me, hey, man, we want to hear Paranoid. We want to hear this. We want to hear that. And then I stopped and thought about it. And I thought, well, you did sing on it. You did co-write it. And so it is a part of you. You're not exactly covering songs. I mean, I met a guy the other day at an in-store. He saw me, he showed me a ticket from 1971. That's when he discovered me and my music with Black Sabbath. And so he's locked onto that era. And he may not like any of the other stuff, but he locked on for me for that period. So I owe it to all my fans to play a little bit of my whole career, you know.
In March 2006, after getting snubbed for 11 years, Black Sabbath finally was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those first three Black Sabbath albums, the 1970 self-titled debut, plus Paranoid and Master of Reality are now available as 2-CD or 2-LP deluxe edition sets containing the original album plus a second disc of rarities. Get your Black Sabbath deluxe edition CD or vinyl set today at Amazon.com. What promises to be the final Black Sabbath concert tour also may be their biggest ever. It kicks off Wednesday in Omaha, Friday in Chicago, Monday the 25th in Minneapolis-St. Paul, across Canada, then the Forum, L.A. on February 11th, two nights at New York City's Madison Square Garden, February 25th and 27th, then Down Under for Australia and New Zealand. Black Sabbath will spend all summer in Europe and Scandinavia, then returning to North America mid-August through September. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my buddy Ozzy Osbourne. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.